people become better at communicating their ideas to humanity, the better ideas will become real. It's not the best idea that wins. It's the person who's able to communicate the idea, sell the idea. That's how that idea wins.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Frederick Haren. And here's three facts that I think you should know about Frederick. One, he is known as the creativity explorer. Frederick has interviewed thousands of people in 70 countries on six continents about their creative process. Two, his book, The Idea Book, was included in the 100 best business books of all time. And three, Frederick owns three islands. Some people own cottages. Frederick owns islands. One of them known as Ideas Island, and the website for that is ideasisland.com. He never stays there. In fact, he lends the island out for free to creative people from around the world who want to spend a week on the island to work on a creative project. Sounds like a fabulous place to get away, especially at any time. Frederick Haren, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Well, thank you, George. I'm very, very happy to be here.
Delighted to be talking with you. And for the benefit of our listeners and viewers, I'll mention that you are from Sweden, currently in Singapore, soon to return to Sweden. Frederick, as a creativity guy, creative thinker, one of the projects or one of the offers that you provide is you help people understand or discover their inner theme. Can you tell us what that means and why might that be important?
Yes. So I do help people with it. It's not an offering. Actually, it's something I do. It's like a gift I have, and I do it not as the creativity explorer, but because I am a professional speaker. I've been a full-time keynote speaker for 25 years. I actually started when I was 27. So straight out of a university, I became a keynote speaker, and now I've been delivering 2,000 speeches in 70 countries. So I think I know one or two things about delivering a speech. And a lot of people come to me for guidance on how to be a speaker and so on. And what I realized is that the one thing that is common with really, really, really good speakers is that they truly know not only the topic that they speak on, but also there's a very deep, profound connection to that topic. And what I realized is a lot of speakers did not have that connection to the topic they speak on. They might have selected a topic because it was something they knew a lot about, but they weren't passionate about it, something that was in demand or whatever the reason might be. But I believe that when you do find what I call your inner theme, your message resonates so much stronger. I describe the inner theme as a universal message that only you can tell, meaning a message that everyone needs to hear. You, from a taxi driver to the president of America, everyone needs to hear this message, but only you, out of all the billions of people on earth, only you are best positioned to deliver this message. And if you find that, it's like you hit the perfect sweet spot on a tennis racket or on a drum, and the message just resonates further and stronger and clearer than if you're just slightly off on the message.
Now, Frederick, I'm reminded too of many speakers who speak on topics that really don't resonate with them. And if I think back to my early days, there were many topics that I spoke about, and it was almost like you read a book. Oh, I'll deliver a speech on this book. I like this book. And eventually you find that inner theme. In your case, how did you discover your inner theme as creativity?
Okay, so the topic is creativity. My inner theme is humanity to the power of ideas. So what that means is I believe in the potential of humanity, and I believe in the power of human creativity. So the humanity to the power of ideas, that's my inner theme. And so many speakers, there are many speakers on creativity and innovation. But the fact that it, for me, that message that stands out is that I, unlike many other creativity speakers, I travel a lot. So I have an understanding of human creativity from around the world. So I have gone to, you know, the slums of Mumbai, or I've been to North Korea to study North creativity, and very few creativity experts have done that. And that, so that's the humanity to the power of ideas part comes in. I'm interested in human creativity, not just Swedish creativity or American creativity or high-tech innovation or innovation in the tech sector. Or I'm interested in it on a much broader scale. And then when you do hit it, so I also describe it like a metal plate, like you throw a ball, and if it's the message is not really solid, the ball would just kind of bounce off you. But if it's very, very solid inside of you, the ball would bounce much further. So it's the same thing. Find that perfect description of who you are, and your message will resonate much more. So humanity to the power of ideas might not resonate with you or a lot of other people, but for me, that's it. Now, how did I find it? It's kind of like it's much easier for me to find someone else's inner theme than my own. It's much easier to cut someone else's hair than to cut your own. So the reason I've helped more than 300 speakers find their inner theme. And the reason I do it for them is that every time I do it for someone else, I learn a little bit more about the process of going deep inside yourself to find your inner theme. And by doing that, it made it easier for me to find it for myself.
That's curious. We can find it easier to help others at times. And while we're helping others, we might be tempted to say, you know what? Maybe I should use this on myself. Maybe I should learn from what I'm trying to teach others.
Yeah, and that's what they say, right? The best way to learn is to teach. So the best way to find your inner theme is to help other people find their inner theme. And by doing that, I'm discovering so much of the process that I then can apply on myself. So I think I'm pretty good at cutting my own hair now. But finding your inner theme is just the first part. And then the second part is to find your moniker, your what I call the brand moniker. So those two are connected, but they're not the same thing.
And how are they connected? What's your brand moniker?
A nickname.
Moniker.
So a moniker is like a nickname, but it's based on the character of a person. A nickname is just a nickname, and a moniker is a nickname based on the character of a person. So a brand moniker is basically a description of your character as a speaker, based on what you speak on. So my brand moniker is the Creativity Explorer. And there are many creativity speakers, but there's only one Creativity Explorer. And to explore means to venture into unknown territory in order to learn more about it. So instead of being a creativity expert, which thousands of people are, an expert kind of implies that you know everything about a topic. An explorer knows nothing about the topic, but is desperate, very, very keen and curious to find out as much as he can. So I explore human creativity. I'd much rather be the creativity explorer than the creativity expert. And that makes me do those unusual interviews with going to Mongolia and interviewing the nomads or a paper artist in Bangkok or those kind of people that I interview to truly understand human creativity, regardless of industry, country, culture, or whatever, the desert of Oman to Silicon Valley. And very, very few people are out of there. If there's 1,000 creativity speakers, there's only one creativity explorer. So the brand moniker just makes me stand out against all the other people who have similar topics to speak on. And the inner theme is that resonance to that message that only I can deliver, but that everyone needs to hear, which is that everyone should be more creative, and everyone should learn from everyone around the world to pick up the best ideas, regardless where they might be.
And I like your moniker of an explorer, because there are too many people who claim to be experts. And the problem with experts is that they act and think like they know everything, exactly. like they've arrived. And the explorer is, well, I'm not there yet. I'm still looking. There's more to find, more to learn.
To venture into the unknown, to discover more about it, makes you curious and it makes you have a curious mindset and a learning mindset and a growth mindset. And it also means that when you do go up on stage, it's not about you. So you're not there as an expert to tell the audience anything. You're just there to share what you learned. But explore literally also the etymology of the word actually means to shout out. So you go on a hunt, you shout out your message. But that's the difference between an explorer and an adventurer. An adventurer just goes out into the unknown. An explorer goes out to the unknown in order to find out something that he or she can come back and tell the world about. That, so I'm not a creativity adventurer, I'm a creativity explorer.
And Frederick, tell me if I've got this right. So the creativity explorer is your label to the rest of the world, how they should see you. And your inner theme, humanity to the power of ideas, that is only for you.
It doesn't have to be. So a lot of people that I have found in a theme thought for, that is also the name of their book. For example, there's a guy, Kevin Cottam. His inner theme is the nomadic mindset, because he is a global nomad, but then he also realized that the mindset of the nomad was so the nomadic mindset. And then he went to travel to different nomadic tribes in Africa and Mongolia and interview them about what can we learn about living life from the minds of the nomadic people. So his inner theme is the nomadic mindset, but his book and his speech is also called the nomadic mindset. So sometimes they're very, very connected. Sometimes the inner theme is something you never tell anyone else. I did an inner theme session today, actually, for a matchmaker. Actually, not a speaker, but a matchmaker. And she will never tell her clients what that inner theme is because they would not understand. But she just messaged me an hour ago and said, I just look at this inner theme and I smile every time I look at it. And that is the key. When the person smiles and the eyes lit up and you feel peace and you find clarity. The clarity is the number one thing. A great inner theme means everything is totally clear for you. When it's the only person, it needs to be clear too. But then you can take that inner theme and sometimes just deliver the same message straight out of the box. Sometimes package it into a message that other people are ready to hear. Because, for example, it could be that you're way ahead of the audience. One of the things I always say when I teach speaking to people is that you need to know a little bit more than the audience, but not too much. Because I started my speaking career speaking about the internet. I was 27 years old. It was 1995. I wrote a book about the internet. I've been to America. I saw the internet. I came home and no one understood anything. My university professor said I was not allowed to write my thesis about the internet. That was just meaningless. But then I did, and I write a book, and I came out and I spoke about the internet. But my challenge was to go back with my knowledge all the way back to where the audience was around the understanding of what the internet was. So I started my speeches literally by saying the internet is a network of networks. That was my opening line, and I had to start there because otherwise the message would have gone over their heads. So my message, my inner theme at that time might have been the World Wide Web, as the whole idea of connecting humanity through computers. I was passionate about it, but I had to go back and say, no, that's not the message. They won't get me.
And it's funny, while you're saying that, I remember one time watching when home computers, PCs, first came about, a store owner who sold PCs was giving a talk about PCs. He lost us because he started by talking not about what it does for us, but he started by talking about the chip. The chip, here's the size of the chip and here's the speed. And we're sitting there thinking, yeah, so what?
Yeah, exactly. And that's very common when it comes to people delivering speeches. They deliver the speech based on where they are and not based on where the audience is.
Based on where the audience is, that is
where the audience mentally is, right? What's their understanding of the topic you're going to speak on? And you have to start there, and then you can bring them all the way to where you are. If you're skilled enough, or rhetorically strong enough, sometimes it might not. I would argue it's always possible as long as you start where they are. there's the, one of my classical rhetorical trick formulas is the four P's. I'm sure you're aware of it. It's position, problem, possibility, proposal. And the first one is important. Position means where are we now? And you just basically describe what the world looks like in words that make the audience say, yes, this is true. This is where we are right now. Then comes the problem. And most people start with a problem right away. If you start with a problem right away and people haven't agreed that that is the problem, then you have lost them. So you start with where we are, then you say the problem. Then you paint the picture. Imagine if we don't have this picture, if we don't have this problem anymore. And therefore, then comes the proposal. What do we need to do now? Very simple rhetorical trick to deliver any speech. America used to be great, but now we have lost our position. That was, you know, the problem is we're not the superpower. We're not the great country that we used to be. We are getting immigrants are coming in and they're raping our women. Therefore, I suggest, but imagine if you live in a country that was as safe as it and innovative as we used to be, good old days. Therefore, I propose to build a wall against Mexico. Classical, very simple rhetoric.
Yes, we can learn a lot from that style, and it makes sense. And I see the process, and yes. I see, and it makes perfect sense. Frederick, at what point in your career did you realize this concept of inner theme, and did you one day just wake up and say, I don't have an inner theme. I don't know who I am. I got to find out.
No, it's been a process for, I would say 15 years. I've been a speaker for 25 years. For the first 15 years, I was a creativity speaker. That was it. I would define myself as an author and a speaker. Then I speak on creativity, and that's very common, but then I realized that was wrong. So I started going deeper and thinking about it more from a more profound way. And then I had versions and versions and versions of it that were always better than the one I had before. But then when I found humanity to the power of ideas, I was like, okay, that's it. It's like anything. You know when the idea is done. You can just tell. I mean, I interview a lot of creative people. I interview a painter. I interviewed once a guy who does mosaics using screws, like 10,000 screws. And I said, when do you know when you're done? And he said, you just know, like 9,999 screws. And no, there's still one more screw missing. And then suddenly go, no, that's it. No more screws. I'm done. So we have this, ideas have this way of telling us that, okay, we've come to a place of calmness now. We are now done. We can rest for a while. But an inner thing can change over time. It's not a static thing. Like, because humans, we are not static. So who knows? 2 years from now, yeah, I might have a totally different inner thing. And same with the brand moniker. It can also change, just like a company. Like, some companies are lucky. Nike has had Just Do It since 1988. But Coca-Cola changes their slogan every 5 years. So yeah, for some, lucky enough to find the perfect one, and it can go on for decades. But you need to wake up every morning and say, is this still true? If not, change it.
And I'm curious, Frederick, do you review your inner theme every day?
Yes. Oh, no, I wouldn't say every day. But considering that I do so many inner theme sessions, I help so many other people with it, I would say that I do it every week. But most of the time I wake up and say, yep, still true. And then that's it. Because it's kind of like being in, I don't know, being in love or whatever. Like, you basically have to check in. Either it's on or off. Does this still resonate with me? If the answer is yes, now what? Marie Kondo, does it spark joy, right? It's very quick, boom. Yes, it does. Okay, move on. No need to analyze it. Yes, but if it doesn't, then you say, okay, this doesn't spark joy anymore. I should now look at it. And then you go into a process of redefining it or sometimes tweaking it, like a logo. Like, sometimes a logo is just tweaked a tiny little bit, or a slogan. Sometimes you just totally change it. Same thing here. This is a brand moniker is basically a speaker's ability to put a slogan or a brand on what you're doing. You could say that the moniker is the brand and the slogan is the inner theme, to kind of summarize it. But there is one more aspect of this that we haven't talked about that I would like to add, because there's an inner theme, there's a brand moniker, but then there's also the core message. And the core message is slightly different. So for example, I used to exemplify this with, Gandhi. Let's use Gandhi as an example. So Gandhi, his brand moniker was the father of the nation, right? And he was, so he wasn't a politician or a freedom fighter. There are many, many politicians and freedom fighters, but he was the father of the nation. That's the brand moniker. You stand up against, you just stick up over everyone else. But his message was an independent India. So people don't follow people. People follow messages. Messages that they believe is so true that they believe this message is meant for them, right? So an independent India is what got millions of people to follow Gandhi, and that turned him into the brand moniker, which was the father of the nation. Greta Thunberg is a great example. You know, the climate activist from Sweden, 17-year-old now, or now she's 19, I think. But she's the voice of the planet. That's her brand moniker. She's not a climate activist. I mean, she is, but there are many climate activists, but she is the voice of the planet. But people follow Greta because the message is we need to save humanity, we have to save the planet. And so many people around the world realize that Greta is onto this. And I follow her because I believe in the message that she is communicating, not I believe in her. And the last example I can use is someone like Anthony Bourdain. Anthony Bourdain and many celebrity chefs, but he was not a celebrity. He was more than a celebrity chef. And he was connecting humanity through food. That was the message that people believed in. And that's why they followed him until he tragically killed himself. But if he hadn't killed himself, his brand moniker would have been the food explorer. But he never lived long enough to get that moniker. So now you have the inner theme, you have the core message, and then you have the brand moniker. And you earn your brand moniker by having a core message that people want to follow.
People follow the message, not the person.
Correct. People do not follow people. People follow messages. So my core message is helping humanity create its potential, which is slightly different from humanity to the power of ideas, because that's my inner thing that makes me wake up in the morning and say, so if, like, for example, you ask me, so should I be on George's podcast? Like, oh yes, I should, because I believe if people become better at communicating their ideas to humanity, the better ideas will become real. It's not the best idea that wins. It's the person who's able to communicate the idea, sell the idea. That's like that idea wins. So if I can help people become better at communicating their ideas and their messages, it is in line with humanity to the power of ideas. That's why I should do it.
Frederick, when someone sits down with you and says, help me find my inner theme. Is there a standard set of questions that you have with them, or is it you just let them talk?
Yeah, I do not have standard set of questions. And that is the challenge. That is why it's a challenge. So the woman I did this, the matchmaker today, I know nothing about it. This is a total stranger for me. I know nothing about her. And I said, hello, what's your name? Tell me about yourself. And in 1 hour, my challenge is to tell them their core inner theme, something that is the most strongest core of who they are. I'm supposed to tell them that in 1 hour that they don't know even themselves. And that's my challenge. That's why I like it. It's like climbing a mountain for me. It's very, very difficult, which means I don't have a standard set of questions, unfortunately. So it's a very deep and profound and fast conversation. I need to go fast. I need to go deep as fast as I can. I do it like, you know, those divers that hold on to weights and just go as deep as they can, as quickly as possible. That's my strategy. I interrupt them if they speak too long or go off topic. I say, I don't have time for this. We need to go deeper.
So in a case like that, you truly are explorer, because you're going into a conversation and you know what you need to find. You have no idea where it is.
I know nothing about them. So it's a perfect example of an exploration. I'm exploring the inner side of this stranger, and I have to do it fast. But you can do it yourself. I mean, you can do it yourself. And questions that I ask, okay, if I would teach anyone how to do it, I look for energy. When someone talks about something and their eyes light up, or a word that keeps coming back over and over. Because if someone let's say someone uses the word I like to help. And they use that when they talk about themselves as an 8-year-old, they talk about themselves at the first job, they talk about themselves what they like to do now, and what they want to do in the future. And they always use, like, in all those instances, they use the word help. Then I know that the inner theme is going to be help, but they don't know it. Very, very often, after 1 hour, I look at them and say, oh, so obviously it's clear, right? What, you know, you're in the theme now, right? And they go, no, I have no idea. And I said, but you just said it 30 seconds ago. And they go, what, I did? Yeah. And then I just turned the screen over. I written the word, the sentence that they said, or the phrase that they said. And they go, oh, did I said that? So that's where the analogy with cutting the hair comes in. It's very hard to do on yourself, but it's not impossible. You can cut your own hair.
Which I've learned to do during the pandemic.
There you go. But I know, for example, I love the name of your podcast, and it, you know, message, the word, the etymology, I'm very much into words, the meaning of words, the etymology of message is actually the same as meaning of the word mission. So a message is a message, and mission is the same word. I mean, if you go deep, far back in history. So a message, you could say, a message is you on a mission. Like, that's how I interpret it. If it's done right, that when you communicate, your words are on a mission to communicate your inner thoughts and convictions.
And I'm curious, and I know we don't have time to do it right now, Frederick, but if you were to go deeper on me, And you're right. The word message does resonate strongly with me. It wasn't by accident. I played with several themes, and I kept coming back to the word message.
Yeah. I wouldn't start with message though. I would start with intended, because message is of the two words more obvious. I mean, not obvious, but of course it's what you talk about. But why did you choose intended? That would be my first question. If I was going to go deeper on this podcast as an inner theme, like, why did you choose to do a podcast on this? Because that's a very good word. Words that are unusual that people use are usually much more, there's much more value. There's more gold there than use the words that everyone uses. So why did you pick intended?
And that's a good question, because in my mind, when we communicate, we send intended messages and we send unintended messages, and often the unintended gets in the way, and people are blind to their unintended message. That's not what I said. Well, that's the way you said it. That's what I heard. And certainly I've learned from my own mistakes there too. I've said something and then said, that didn't come out right. Not what was in here. It's not what I really meant to say, but it came out wrong. So that's my challenge. That's my mission, to help people deliver their intended message more successfully.
Yeah. And it's such a good advice, because a lot of speakers are, and there's the balance between what the audience needs to hear, what the audience wants to hear. But at the core of it, it is what is the message you want to communicate? Because I've interviewed thousands of speakers and done thousands of speakers. And if you ask people, what is the best speech you've ever heard? The common denominator is always that the speaker was authentic. You can only be authentic if the message that comes out is the intended message that person actually wanted to communicate. And we can do the opposite, an unintended message or like an unauthentic speech. And there is no value in an unauthentic message. It's not even a message. It's something else. I don't know what it is, but it's something else. But an authentic delivered message. I once watched a TEDx talk by a Swedish poet. It's a wonderful poet, but he started his speech in very broken English. He said, I'm always nervous when I give a speech, but now I'm nervous in English. That was his opening. And the audience just melted, and the rest of the speech was in absolute terrible English, and no one could care less. We just loved it. And one of my favorite speakers is Hans Rosling, also a Swedish guy. You know Hans Rosling, one of the most famous TED Talks. And his English is very, very broken, but so authentic. So if your message is not coming from the core of who you are, and you can, I don't know, you can stutter and you can sweat, and that doesn't matter. People would love it.
Mm-hmm. And very true. And we will, I've found that we will forgive many flaws if we like and trust you.
Yes. Stephen Hawking, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Frederick, you offer clarity sessions to help people find their theme. If for those who might be interested to reach out and connect with you, what's the best way to do that?
Okay, I would say just connect with me on LinkedIn. There's only one Frederick Harren. That's only one Frederick Harren in the world, I think, but definitely not on LinkedIn. So that's the best way. Just connect on LinkedIn and send me a message.
You can find Frederick Harren on LinkedIn. You can find that information in the description below for your listening. Frederick is Frederik. There's no C before the K. I made that mistake in my email. And Harren is Haren. That's Haren. You can find Frederick Harren on LinkedIn. Frederick, if you could give one, two, or three pieces of advice to a business leader who's leading a team and who wants to keep the, you know, make the team work well, keep them cohesive. Of these three concepts you talked about, is there one of them applies more to the team than others, or are they all, do they all need to be in cohesion?
Well, the inner team doesn't belong to, has nothing to do with the team. It has to do with the leader, though. And I think it's the same thing there. A leader who knows who he or she is and truly what the values and the purpose and the reason they wake up in the morning or whatever, like truly is grounded in himself or herself and the direction they are going. Those kind of people are people that people like to follow. And Nelson Mandela coming out of prison, right? He knew who he was. And so spend more time figuring that out. I went to a Buddhist retreat and did 11-day silent meditation. That is an awesome way to figure out who you are deep inside, you know, below all that mind chatter, and go truly who you are. And when you know who you are, you're going to be an amazing leader. Not only an amazing leader, you're going to be a much better person, but you're also going to be a better leader.
Thank you, Frederick. And I can only imagine, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be silent for 11 days. Not even, hello, this is George.
No, we had 15 minutes a day with the monk. And do I have time for a story?
Please go.
I had 15 minutes with my monk per day, and he would ask me questions to figure out what, and the rest of the day, total silence, just meditation. And then during those 15 minutes, once I asked a question, and he said, always be in the moment. But of course, that's what they like to say. And I said, but what do you mean? So I said, so I'm not supposed to rehearse my speech? And he goes, yeah, you're not supposed to rehearse your speech, because then you're living in the future. And I said, but like Tiger Woods, they will imagine the ball going into the hole. Yeah, he said, that's wrong. You should always be in the moment. And when you go up and do the putt, that's when you do the putt. I said, no, come on. And then he looked at me and smiled. And he said, Frederick, imagine you go up on stage. And in that moment, when you go up on stage, you are 100% in that room, on that stage, with the audience, right there and then. And then you speak what is in your heart. Do you think you would deliver a good speech? And I go, yeah, you're absolutely right. Of course I would. And I would feel every nuance of that audience and every emotion in the room. And I could tweak. And I said, rehearsing a speech is totally meaningless, because I don't know what the room is going to be like. So, yeah, so he had a point, I have to agree. And I do that. I prepare my speeches, but I do spend a lot more time making sure I am in the moment when I go up on that stage. Because, again, that's about authenticity and delivering a pure and authentic message to the people who are actually there in the room. And you are not nervous at all.
Powerful advice, Frederick. Thank you for that. My guest today is Frederick Harren, reminding you that people follow the message, not the person.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.